Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. Talking with my guest today is like taking a masterclass in personal effectiveness. He is the Director of Sales Excellence for IHS Market and is responsible for developing leaders. He is a certified human capital strategist and holds a Master of Organizational Leadership from Gonzaga University. In his personal consulting practice, he works with his clients in areas of organizational leadership, strategy, sales, business agility, and personal and team effectiveness. When he is not coaching leaders and professionals, he enjoys living out his dream of being the world's greatest dad and spending time outdoors with family and friends. His name is Brett Nelson, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Brett, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bobby. Appreciate you the time today. It's great. It's great to connect.
Well, thank you. And hey, I loved our conversation the other day. And when I got off the phone, I'm like, there's a person who's had an interesting journey. Would you mind just sharing with us a little bit about that journey?
Sure. Well, I was born in a hospital. No, okay. Flash forward a little bit. No, I have a very fun life. I would say very fortunate. My dad was in the military, so I was had a great opportunity to get a global perspective on life very early. I had a chance to move around every 3-4 years and get to know a lot of people and learn how to the ins and outs of people and in being new, the new guy and the new person on the block, as well as trying and doing different things and just having a good experience with that. I think that's carried on through my career, through school. I flunked out of college at one point because I was having too much fun doing all the extracurriculars. Yeah, it was one of those times it's hard to explain to parents like why you were majoring in extracurricular activities, not in class. Yeah. But definitely learning is a way and, waited tables for a company for a little while and was going through that working the restaurant business. I had a great mentor that told me Brett, you really do need to finish your school, finish up your degree. Cause if you ever wanted to get out of this business, which you're really good at, you need to have a degree to follow up on that. So finished out my degree and then start working in hospitality and worked for Marriott Hotels and loved that opportunity working there with a big corporation. Lots of training, learned all about people and adult education and how to teach adults and work with adults because I was managing people that were older than me, maybe even to the point some of them were 40 years older than I was.
That's hard.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. The first day on the job show up to them and the director said, there are people that applied for your job that you have right now that are like 30, 40 years older than you. That's pretty sobering because their life experience had doubled mine just from being on this great planet of having that many experiences. But it was fun to learn people and hear their stories and catch what's going on, how they live, how they've got to the point where they are. And from there, just went into, different training roles, working with for an insurance company for a while, spell and sales. I mean, I can keep going. It's been fun. I think one of the most interesting parts of my journey is I started my own company. I had a consulting firm for about 2 years doing leadership development and coaching for, I was living in Las Vegas at the time and had a great experience with that because I picked up the who's who in Las Vegas and made cold calls.
I love that when you told me that. I mean, that takes some gumption.
It was fun. I mean, it was scary, but like, what do you have to lose, right? So I picked up across the head of the bank or this particular casino or this nonprofit organization or this law firm or whatever. And I said, well, what I've got to lose? I mean, they were normal people at one point too. And I didn't get a ton of meetings, but I got enough. And it was a great way to connect into the community. And I got plugged into the Las Vegas business community, which is still a big part of my heart. Not the casino business is its own city, but the other part of it's, you know, very small town and you get to know people and it was great.
Yeah.
And a couple different corporate jobs into where I am right now working with IHS Market.
Wow. So Brett, I have to ask you, picking up the who's who and starting to make those calls. Yeah. What did you learn about yourself by doing that?
Well, you know, it's funny because from that, I got an opportunity to do a strategic planning session for the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And it was like, had I never done a strategic planning session, like facilitated it? Nope. But what I learned about myself was as I'm standing in this, I was in the MGM hotel and I'm standing in this monster ballroom and working with all these executives that are part of the board for UNLV. And I sat there and like looking around and said, wow, like I'm here. Not that I've arrived or got to any pinnacle of this, but it was really weird saying like, how does this happen? And I really feel like that's created a mindset of mine of say yes to situation. You know, anytime people ask you say, hey, would you like to do something? Sure, I'll give it a go.
Right.
And I think that mindset has carried me on throughout my life, my career since then is why not? What do you got to lose? Anybody can do it. You get the credentials, you get the letters behind your name, and those are important. Yet at some point, it's just a person doing a function, right? People doing the business with people.
Right. You know, I love that. When we talked last time, you know, I made a note of that, you know, that whole just say yes to projects. Is that, you know, being one of your mindsets? And I remember when I started my business in 2000 and probably had no business doing that, but you know, there you go. And I remember someone said, you know, cause you're always sheepish or like hesitant about that first project.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I read someone said, hey, think about it this way. A brain surgeon has a first patient. I'm like, well, nothing I'm doing is that serious.
That's a perspective. I like, so who was your first client? Do you remember your first project? Do you remember
who it was? Yes. Her name was Diane and okay. She ran a woman owned construction company and okay. She hired me to do copywriting for some of her marketing stuff. And sure. I remember thinking, why is she hiring me? But you know, she loved the work and it led to other projects.
Right.
You know? So Brett, I have to ask you, like, where do you think that mindset really comes from? I mean, it couldn't have just been that one experience.
No, well, I mean, I think part of it, if I'm like rolling back the clock quite a bit, I think as a military kid, like a military army brat, you just kind of have to, because it's like you show up in a new town, a new place and say, do you want to come play ball or do you want to come do this? Sure. Why not? Right. And then carrying it through the career, I think the opportunities are you're either going to, it's a growth mindset concept, right? Like growth mindset, fixed mindset, where
that's right.
You're either going to earn or you're going to or be successful. You know, you're either going to win. You're going to win at least, or you're going to learn how not to do it. And there were some times when I learned not to do that again or got into a little bit over my head in situations, ultimately ended up well because you have good relationships with the people I work with. But I think that's what it comes down to is like, I just don't look at the world as saying like, it's only limit. It's limiting to what's possible. I think anything's possible. If you, I mean, it sounds cliche, but if you put your mind to it, you can do things.
Yeah.
You can learn it. You can learn things very easily.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, there's that quote by, I think it's Nelson Mandela, where he says, I never lose. I either win or I learn.
Yeah.
I agree. And I love that.
Yeah. I teach my kids the same thing. It's like my son is like working through junior high and the hard times of being a teenager. And like, look, Jace, either you're learning or you're going to win or you're going to learn how to not do it.
That's right. And sometimes those lessons can be painful, but they're so good.
Right. Absolutely.
And I love the whole growth mindset, you know, Carol Dweck, her research. Would you just speak to that a little bit, the difference between a growth and a fixed mindset?
Yeah, well, a growth mindset looks at the situation as saying life is a progressive way of looking at things, things are opportunities, you know, and I'm mischaracterizing a lot of what Dweck's book, she's fantastic. And the book is new addendums and new materials all the time. But I would say capture it from a perspective and say, how do I look at this and say I'm falling forward? And it's a constant, like, I'm learning new ways of doing things. And it's not always just about that I can or can't do something, which is somewhat of a fixed mindset where, you know, resources are finite. Only certain people can be successful. If you can't be perfect at it in your first go, then you can't do it at all, or you shouldn't do it at all. And those are fixed mindsets. And those just they're kind of scratchy to me. They don't feel right. And so another book that I like around the similar concepts called The Art of Possibility.
Yeah.
By Benjamin Zander, that talks about, you know, he tells a story about the two salesmen or the salespeople that went down to some developing country. And it was in like the 1800s or 1900s, and they wired home and they had two messages. One salesperson said, terrible news, they don't wear shoes. Now they sell shoes for a living, remember that. So the terrible news, they don't wear shoes. And then the other person wired home and say, glorious opportunity they don't get. And I think that tells the story really well of growth mindset. I look at this and say, is this a growing opportunity? Can I grow? Can I learn? Is there opportunities for me to learn from failure or from just putting effort into it? Or a growth mindset, say, I've never done that. That's going to be too hard. I'm not interested in doing that. Or I failed at that in the past. So therefore, my failure is my else or my future. I'm never going to be successful at that.
Right. I just love that. I love the two approaches, you know, like glorious opportunity, right? Yeah. I mean, it's awesome. Yeah. Now, you work a lot with salespeople now, so you must see this stuff, you know, quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, especially right now, we've been experiencing this over the last 6 months with, you know, the world essentially stopping or putting it on its ear. And now suddenly we have to figure out how to do things again. And I heard a lot of, I can't sell. I don't know how to sell not meeting with my customers or going out and meeting face to face, or I'm a face to face person. That's mm-hmm. how I sell. And I notice a lot of fixed mindsets that are showing up, and it's sad in a way of saying, look, like you are wildly successful and you're limiting yourself to now the fact that you think you're the only one that's dealing with this right now. Like everybody's dealing with this. So you see that side of the coin. And then the other side of the coin is, great, this has leveled the playground. I've never been able to get a hold of customers so readily. You know, I've been able to where before I'd have to kind of work the organization and kind of layer myself into it. But now I can call the VP directly and have a conversation with him or her pretty quick. And because everyone's accessible. So it's like, is it terrible news? Nobody has shoes, or glorious opportunity? Everybody answers the phone now.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. You see that in both mindsets. And as you start creating we can share that kind of thoughts around other centered and being more focused on the other person is like, hey, look, we're much more empathic now, or we have to be, or the ones that are being much more successful than the ones that are like the product pushers or the one that's like, I got to tell my story and be in front of somebody to convince them to buy something.
Yeah. It really does come down to, you know, what's our motive?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So now you have a graduate degree in, is it leadership?
Yep. I have a graduate degree in organizational leadership from Gonzaga University.
Okay. So how do you, when you're dealing with salespeople or, you know, even your kids, right? How do you help someone cultivate more of a growth mindset?
So part of it is I look at this and I would start by looking at things. And one of the things I learned in my master's program is about mindfulness and starting again, looking at a situation and seeing something and seeing it again. And stick with me on this, the growth mindset, because what it recognizes, say, I can look at a situation and say, like, I'm going to climb a mountain. I can look at it and say, oh my gosh, that is terrible. That's going to be, there's no way, absolutely no way. But if I say, let's break it down into little pieces, let's look at that trip again and say, let's just get through the first mile, or let's get to the, let's break it down into pieces and parts. And so part of the opportunity sometimes with people that have a fixed mindset is they get so stuck on the fact that they look at, it's like the phrase that say, how do you eat an elephant, you know, one bite at a time. They get so stuck on the fact that they have to swallow the elephant as a whole that it almost becomes paralyzing.
Yep.
That they're like, too much analysis, there's too much, it's too grandioso, or no one's ever been successful. And, you know, no one's ever been successful at climbing a mountain in one step. Little steps at a time. So I think that's what I help with my kids as well as my sales teams I work at. Say, okay, let's look at your number, your quota, even in time where COVID has affected business, and let's break it down. How many calls is that per day? I mean, that's blocking and tackling sales 101. But I think sometimes we get so stuck on the big number that we forget, you know what? It's just really, especially in sales, it's just a sustained duplicated effort every day of making my calls, connecting with clients one by one. And it only, you know, it's one call at a time. It's not 10 at once.
That's right.
And growth mindset, right? Like, what do I need to do? Break it down in little pieces that I can create these momentum in winning.
Yeah. And the momentum's huge.
100%. You know, the momentum, I think that if half the battle is like, you know, so I'm a runner. I do, I've competed Ironman triathlons and long distance running and stuff like that. And I know, for example, when I'm training for Ironman, when you're running, if you stop, it's really hard to get started.
That's the hardest part, isn't it?
And you're like, oh no, I sat down. And like, you just don't sit down. Like, do everything you can to stay upright, because once you sit down, your body starts going like, oh, but it's that forward momentum, even if it's a walk. It's momentum that carries you through, and you'll finish. It might not be pretty, but the momentum is so critical in creating, especially a mindset around winnings. Like I'm little wins today, little wins. And I focus on coaching a lot of people around micro strategies of 4 to 5 critical tasks per day to create a winning mindset for every day. Because it's a growth mindset versus fixed.
Yeah. And it's funny, Brett, what you were describing, you know, that the little wins or the, you know, 1 mile at a time, whatever. I think I shared, I live in Colorado and I love road cycling. And
well,
I remember,
sure.
Oh my goodness, the first time, well, it still happens, but whenever I'm trying to, I'm cycling and I'm going up a mountain pass, I mean, it's hard.
Yep.
And if you just look at the whole thing, you're like, well, I can't possibly do it. So it's like, okay, I'm going to look 20 feet ahead.
That's right.
And then you're like, hey, I did that. I can do another 20 feet.
Yeah, that's right. Or the other one, like, especially, so I can share the love of cycling on that. It's like, you know what? I'm not going to get out of the seat, or I'm going to get out of the seat and pedal 5 times.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to get my little rest, or, as triathletes, they actually teach you not to get out of the saddle when you're climbing the mountains and just sit back, gear down, and just spin up the hill, because there's no other way you're going to get up that faster. But if you stop, you know, it's like, you know, what I'm talking about? Like, you get in the middle of the hill, and if you stop, you're walking the rest of the way.
you
can't start in the middle.
No. Or you're thinking, you know what? I'm just going to turn around and go back down, because this is hard. Oh man. There are times where it's like, just keep your legs moving. Just keep your legs moving. I don't care how slow it is. As long as my legs are moving, I'm going in the right direction.
I remember looking it down one time and seeing my speedometer was like 3 miles an hour. I can run faster than this, but I'm staying in this bike.
Oh, I've had that same feeling. Like, seriously, this is the best I can do, but I don't care. I'm still on the bike.
I'm on the bike. That's right.
That's right. Oh man, that's good. So when we were talking before, you were saying how sometimes that what you've noticed is people kind of get emotionally hijacked. Would you mind sharing something about that?
Yeah, I think it goes into, again, some of the growth mindset, fixed mindset. We keep going back to that theme, but there's if we study brain science, and so it's a lot of the things I love to talk to, especially salespeople around, is one of my sales mentors back in the day said most of the success in sales is done from the eyebrows up. Meaning it's in the head. And I believe it. I totally see this, because you can see the salespeople when they're emotionally, or their mindset's out of the game, they're out. And they take some calibration to get set up. So the thing about when you study brain science, there's the little part of your brain called the amygdala. And it's the part of the oldest part of your brain. And if it gets hijacked or you have emotional, it's basically controls the emotional part of your brain that says, is it going to eat me? I'm going to eat this, or am I going to run away from it? And so it controls that part of your brain. But what happens is when you get emotionally hijacked or something gets so frustrating where your emotions take over, the logic center of your brain or the neocortex shuts off or is not able to comprehend. And so you're not thinking through things logically. You're not able to break things down into little pieces because that's the logic. That would be like, okay, we're climbing up this hill. Logically, if I just get through this next 20 and the next 20 and the next 20. But if you're like, I hate cycling and I hate driving, you know, I hate spinning and I hate that I'm going so slow. You're getting into this emotional hijack mode where you're no longer physically able to cognitively think through a thought.
Yeah. I remember the first time I heard that expression, I just loved it. And I thought, man, you see that a lot where people get hijacked by their own emotions. Yeah. And it's hard to pull yourself out of that though, I think.
It totally is. And so when you're coaching, you're finding yourself in that situation where like, I'm in the heat of the moment, I'm saying things that I may not need, or I'm in an emotional situation where I am not my best self in terms of like, again, being able to say things that you want to say or act the way that you want. You know, the tips I would share with you is walk away. You really do need to disengage. You need to step away from it. There's a lot of science around the fact that you need oxygen. So when people say, hey, I need to get some fresh air, your body's actually saying that. You're saying it, but your body's really needing it because you're in an emotional hijack standpoint where you're not getting enough oxygen to your brain. So you need to step away.
Yeah.
Or increase the other part of it is increase go to the other part of your brain of gratitude.
Yeah. So even in the heat of the moment, someone could do that, go to that place of gratitude.
Yep. It's hard to get, it takes some training though, because it's like, you know what? I really hate, let's use the cycling example. It's a pretty benign example. I hate riding my bike or I hate this hill or whatever. If you stop for a second and say, you know what? And I like the fact that I'm outside, or I like the ability that I have a choice to ride my bike up this hill, or I have an ability to have a bike that works, or have a body that can support this, or my heart that can support. And you start reframing this into the bigger picture around gratitude. Then what happens is that moment of hijack, it can still suck. It can still be really hard.
It still hurts.
Yeah, it still hurts. Yet when you get to that, the top, you don't feel as bad about like, oh man, I shouldn't have complained about it, because you had a lot of things that were much more important and much more higher order thinking around that because you allowed yourself to be grateful.
Right. I think that's really important. So Brett, the whole thing around gratitude, it's funny you say that, because part of my backstory is I got really sick. I almost died back in 2003 and I spent years in bed trying to get my strength back. Mm-hmm. And I remember for a while I'd be out biking and I'd be so like disgusted. I was going so slow. Right. And my way through it was to say, you know what? You could be in bed. Just take happiness and joy in the fact that you're out here. So it sounds like that kind of thought process.
Well, yeah. And I share that with her, you know, again, in the context of selling, coaching salespeople, it's like the same thing. It's like, look, you're selling products that are transformative to the business. They may not be giving the price that you want or may not accessible, but the fact is that you are in work right now, or you have the ability and you have an ability to make a living for your family.
Yeah.
And provide for these. I mean, like I think from a kindness standpoint and an emotional standpoint, I think we need more of that. It's just reframed to what's most important, where we're focusing on the things that we're more like than we are dislike, or the things that we want versus the things that we don't want. Our brain computes better with the positive than the negative, because we have to unprogram the negative. It's just that's amazing. And imagine that carried you through and even still probably some today. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I always think that in the wintertime when I'm out there cross country skiing and I see someone pass me, it's like, hey, doesn't matter. I'm out here. That's all that matters.
That's right. You can have those winter sports. You can stay outside all year.
You're not a winter sport.
I don't like being cold. I like being able to ski down the mountain and saying, okay, I'm going to go in now.
Oh, I love the winter sports. Oh my goodness. So I have to ask you, when you talk to salespeople about this, because you know, salespeople, they can be very hard driving. How do they receive the gratitude message?
So part of it, I think, is where they are in their career. And I would say this is even extends past salespeople. That's just in leaders in general. Early career, I don't think they get it.
Right.
I think it's just all about the hustle and it's all about the grind or all about the big numbers and the ego and the swagger. I think as people start settling into their career and recognizing that, you know, life is a grind, you know, as they maybe create that metaphor of it's a grind, or they create some ways of looking and saying, you know, it's just a process, that they're starting to look and saying, okay, how do I reconcile with this every day? Because this is normal. Whereas early career, maybe they're still hanging out with their buddies, or they're still partying, or they're just out of university, so they don't know any better yet. But it's the ones that have the long stay power and the consistent production, they start getting into their head. They start understanding this and saying, okay, this isn't working. And my negative attitude is actually showing up at my customer side. Because I'm starting to act really chippy, or I'm starting to act like that salesperson, you know, those ones that are like the sleazy ones that give salespeople a bad name, because they're like, that's what they see. It's black and white. It's not like, oh, cool, how do I get to meet new people and connect with people and be other-centered?
Right. Yeah. I think that salespeople who love what they do, it's that whole, oh, I get to meet someone new. I mean, they love it.
Yeah, it's a natural curiosity. And when you start into tapping into that curiosity, there's not really space for like, oh man, this sucks. Because you're always learning, right? Growth mindset again.
That's right. I mean, curiosity, it's such a powerful tool that we have at our disposal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as people, you know, what another one of my sales mentors used to say is like, the people love to talk about their favorite topic, which is themselves.
Yeah.
The more you get them talking about themselves, the more they like you. I'm like, cool, that's fine with me. I'll get them talking about themselves.
Yeah.
Even if I've heard the story 100 times.
But it's true. I mean, because that is everyone's favorite. It's everyone's favorite topic, you know?
That's right.
Now, a minute ago, you said something about they get caught up in the grind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's when we get, whether you're in sales or production or product development or something like that, it's like there are days it's the groundhog day, right? So you wake up and it's the same old thing that's happens, you know, every day. You wake up, hit the alarm, snooze the alarm, get up, do my thing in the morning, then go to the office, whatever. I think when people get caught up in that, and this, they don't feel like they have hope. They don't feel like they have, there's something to be grateful for. I think they start losing their way around why and what's the purpose, you know, their bigger purpose around their clarity of their goals or clarity of what, you know, what's their, I guess, their sale, their personal ethos.
Mm-hmm.
You start disconnecting from that. Again, that's part of the emotional thing and a little bit of spiritual in terms of whatever your belief is on that. But the idea of that is you start disconnecting from the bigger purpose, then it's pretty easy just to get caught up in the emotional hijacked, if you will, of the world. So that's part of the gratitude piece. It's like looking at the bigger picture. And so when you find yourself in that way, which we all do at some point or in the grind, it's a moment of saying, okay, first I got to stop, recognize that you are in the grind, give yourself some grace because it happens to everybody, and say, oh crap, I never thought that would happen to me. Guess what? It did. So it's what it is.
Yeah.
And now what? Now what are you going to do about it? It's like, you know, look at these sports teams that have the undefeated record and then they lose. Then what? Does that make them any less of a good team? No. Just going to go back to the work next week.
Yeah. And I love when you said, you know, giving yourself some grace, because it's critically important. And yet I think, having coached the people that I have, I think mm-hmm. sometimes it's really hard for us to extend grace mm-hmm. to ourselves.
Oh, sure. We're our own worst critic. You know, like no one ever stands up in karaoke and say, you know what, I'm the best singer. Right? They're like, I'm sorry, everybody, this is my favorite song, right? Nobody ever does that. Like,
we're good.
Well, the people that do stand up there and own the karaoke, I don't know why we wouldn't care, but whatever. Okay.
It works.
are they like, you know what? We love that confidence. Even if they're terrible singers, that confidence is infectious.
Yeah.
They're like, wow, they get it, right? They're like, they're allowing themselves to say, they realize that they're not the best singer. They're not Tony Bennett, or they're not Kelly Clarkson, or I don't know, whoever. The idea of these great singers, but they can do it. And they give themselves a little grace and say, I'm going to give myself a little pass because I'm not a pro at this. I'm learning. Nothing's terminal here. Why not?
Right. And they probably love it.
I'm sure they do. If you ever watch karaoke, they definitely love it. The ones that are not great.
Speaking of something I'd never do, because no one needs to do that.
Okay, growth mindset. We're going to do karaoke sometime.
Oh my goodness. Just make sure the place is empty. I mean, okay, Brett, at one point I had 5 cats and I love to sing around the house. Like I love country music and I love singing. My one cat, little one, would come over and I'd be singing and she would very strategically bite the back of my ankle and then she'd look up at me like, we've had this discussion before. So I'm like, I'm bad enough the cat wants me to shut up.
Well, maybe we need to counsel the cat a little bit, okay? So like, give it another go, okay?
Oh, my goodness. I think it's the funniest thing. Now, a few minutes ago, I heard you mention the word clarity. Mm-hmm. And I know that you have some frameworks that you teach and you coach people with. And I know one of them involves clarity. So could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure, sure. I believe that most success comes down to 3 different factors: clarity, structure, and growth. And we talked about the growth quite a bit already about how you've got to figure out, how do I wire myself for growing, not my wire myself for staying what it is and status quo. So you've got to, it's a constant quest to say, am I learning? Am I growing? So there's that. And then the clarity piece comes into it is, it's like, again, we'll go back to the example of climbing a mountain, whether you're on a bike or hiking, whatever. It's like, you know where you want to get to the top, but how bad do you want to get there? Oh. How clear is it for you that what the top's going to look like? Because if you don't really know it that bad, you don't know what you want, you're just going to just start grinding. You're just going to start kind of walking through the forest and hope you get to the top. I went to a workshop with Paula Newby Fraser, who is one of the best Ironman triathletes of all time. And she is fantastic. And before my first Ironman, she said, you know, you have to have a reason that's bigger than just finishing the race, or you won't finish. It's too hard of a race. And I felt like that was an anchor, one of those inflection points in your life where that's showed up quite a bit. It's like, how clear am I about what this goal is and how big of a goal is it for me or whatever the task is? And if I'm not clear on that, it'll be energy and it'll be effort, but it may get distracted or I might get off track because I don't know. And then I'll find myself miles away from where I wanted, or yards away, or, you know, or feet away, or just giving up altogether because I wasn't really clear on what it was I wanted and how bad I wanted that particular goal or task.
Wow. That's a really good point. You know, why do you want it? Why is it important?
And Simon Sinek talks all about it. Start with the why. And this has been a hard thing, I think, is he's rolled that out in a couple books since then about starting with the why. A lot of companies struggle with that because they know the how and the what, but the why, and creating a compelling why. I mean, there's a business in Boulder that's just down the road from you a little bit that, you know, one of the goals that started that business was she wanted to democratize financial information. Wow, that's kind of cool. I want to be part of that organization that democratized financial information, because she felt there was an injustice in the world, and there was, and then a little bit of imbalance, but that was her. And so like she had in her head of what the business was going to look like, how it's going to act like, what the subculture and the cultures within the team. And she's living that reality right now.
That is really cool.
Great. And there's a couple times when that founder went away for a little while or was in a different role of the business and it kind of got sideways. It never went negative, like red in the red, but the people disconnected from that clarity and they kind of got lost a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that kind of begs an interesting question. Why is it so hard for businesses and maybe, you know, people in general, why is it so hard to connect with or maybe even articulate the why?
That's a million-dollar question that we'll make buy an island on there, Bobby.
Come on, I thought you'd have it.
I think part of it is that the way the scorecard has been determined.
Ah, okay.
and we look at this and say companies that are either publicly traded or want to be publicly traded, the ones that are not operating in the space, that it's always about dollars and cents and the quarterly business reviews and what, you know, what's reported to Wall Street. Yeah. Otherwise, you've got to get out of that what and how.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when we talk about curiosity, like if you're in sales because you want to connect with people and help them do their job better and help them be successful and be very other centered, that's a why.
That's why
I'm here. Right? I'm here to help. I'm here to serve. But the companies that say I'm here to make a profit, that's an outcome. And you know that it's they may grow at a certain pace, but I think at some point they're going to top out.
Yeah. I think the why helps us keep going.
Oh yeah. Well, and at different levels too, right? Because a why for an executive may be different than a why for an entry-level analyst.
Right. It can be very different.
That's perhaps, I mean, if we're being honest and providing some grace here, that's probably why it's a little tough for companies to connect with the why, because when you have big multinational companies like the one I work for sometimes, is you have such a disparity between the executives and the analysts, the front lines, that's like what is the commonality other than the logo?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, but smaller companies, and reading right now Malcolm Gladwell's book, Tipping Point, mm-hmm. where he talked about how there's the law of 150. That means like once you get above a group of 150, it's actually becomes harder to regulate and harder to manage relationships. So if you're looking at those companies that are those small companies that love being small companies, they're generally 150 employees and below. Wow. I'm just reading it right now. So it's really interesting because he uses that as a case and it seems to match.
Huh.
Small businesses, 150 people, you can manage the relationships, you can get to know people very well on an intimate level. Once you get past the 150, it becomes a different beast altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. You told me that you were rereading that. That's such a great book. Oh my God.
It is. And it's really interesting. For whoever's listening right now, read it again, if you haven't, if you've already read it or read it, and just think of COVID-19 and how things are going, all the craziness that's going around us. Like it's very much interesting.
Wow. So I know we talked about clarity, talked a little bit about growth. We haven't talked about structure too much, but before we go to structure, I have to ask, I'm dying of curiosity, what was your why for doing the Ironman?
So great question. My grandpa, who was my reason for starting a triathlon, and he and I connected very much on lots of things growing up. I spent a lot of time with them during the summers and stuff when I was a teenager. And he did triathlon. He was a marathoner, and then he had two hip replacements and then started doing triathlon. Oh. And so, yeah, so he's one of those guys. It's just like he's really just amazing things. He was 77. He died in a bike wreck, in a triathlon. So the death wasn't the motivation, was the more the fact that he just was like, he would have wanted me to do this race with him.
Hmm.
And I connected with that, and the race happened to be in the town. It was in St. George, Utah, down in the southern part of the state. And that's where he lived. And it was one of those things that like, I knew my grandpa KF always wanted to do an Ironman. He wouldn't have done it because of his hips, but he would have wanted me to do it. And so that was my why, is like, I want to do this for grandpa. And I had, you know, his initials on my cap and my jersey and stuff. And I remember one point I was at mile 18 on the run, and it was dark because I'm not a fast guy. Very dark.
Doesn't matter.
No, but I remember like listening to that and just kind of calling out, because you're just by yourself and either, you know, emotionally having a moment. And it was, I really felt my grandpa was like there. He's like, dude, you keep going, bro. I'm very proud of you, and keep pushing. So I finished 16 hours, 40 minutes, 20 minutes before cutoff. And man, it's crazy. It was a great moment, but that was my why. It's my grandpa connected to connecting to people and connecting to a bigger purpose, that things like that can happen.
Wow. And I think it's a brilliant illustration of that's why you kept going. And oh my goodness, like that just had to be so emotional.
Totally. Totally. I mean, it's dark, you're crying in the middle of the desert. I mean, it's like in any other time on a movie, you're like, oh, I felt so bad for that person. But yeah, that was me.
But how many Ironmans have you done?
So I've done one. This year was slated to do one. COVID canceled it or had to reschedule that one. So that was, it's going to be postponed for another year. But I'm about three quarters away through the training for another one.
Wow.
Put it on because of lots of other things with COVID.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Thank you for sharing that, because I was just dying of curiosity because I knew you had to have a why.
Of course.
What about structure? Tell me a little bit about that.
So our brains are, again, wired for, they want to make order out of chaos. And when you're finding a situation, I strongly believe that there are people that are just wired to do, like, very meticulous about their schedules, 15 minutes, you know, do the same thing almost to the point where they're compulsive about their particular behaviors or activities. Fantastic. God bless them. They're great. Fantastic. Whatever. That's not me. I'm a little bit more random and a little bit more just like sporadic in terms of how my time management. However, there are core things in your life that you need to create routines and structure around, or they will not happen. So the thinking on that is you start breaking down. It's kind of like when you're preparing to go for, like, on a bike ride up on mountainside, like, you know, you've got to fill your tires to a certain, you have to do that every time.
That's right.
You have to make sure your bottles are full, right? You've got to make sure that you've got, you know, the one time I remember when I didn't check my saddlebag for CO2 cartridges was the one time I got a flat.
That's right. Always happens.
So, always happens. Right. And so even if you're like, oh, I've checked it, just no, check it in. These little routines, these little micro routines are little structure pieces of your life that are for the critical things in your life, create structure around them so that you make sure that they get done. Hmm. And so with salespeople, it's like, okay, when you break down your numbers, is it 10 calls a day? Is it 2 connections a day? Like, what is that? And you work tirelessly until you get that critical task done, that routine done. And then you can take a break you want or be a little bit less particular or less structured, if you will, the rest of your day.
Yeah.
But get that done. And so everyone's got a thing, you know, everyone's got a one or two things. Like you just have to discover what those things are based upon your clarity of your goals. What do I want? Then you create the small routines around, and then you say, I'm going to give myself a grace, because if I didn't get those critical tasks done, growth mindset, how am I going to do better next tomorrow?
Right. Now, Brett, as you were talking there, it made me think, if a person does that with the structure, right? You know, those critical things.
Sure.
If a person does that consistently, does that lead to habits?
It does. It does. Right. So when we're coaching, when I work with people, I break it down, and I got this from Andy Frazella, who is the CEO of First Form. And he talks about his 4 to 5 critical tasks. And what he does is say these 4 to 5 critical tasks, and I call them structures or whatever, different names. It doesn't really matter that per se. The idea of that is, let's just say you say, I need to get better at drinking water. And so currently, like, I have a goal. So I'm going to drink a gallon of water every day. Okay. Well, after a while, I don't have to make that a critical task for the day. I don't have to create a routine around that because it becomes a habit.
Right.
And so there's things like, and there's another book I like that's called Atomic Habits that talks about when you're finding things that you're doing or you're not doing that you want to start doing, is do them in little spurts to start them off. He calls them the 2-minute rule, or there's a couple different other strategies that he teaches in the book. But the idea of that is, when you create these daily routines, eventually they become habits and you don't have to think about them anymore. They become reflex.
Right. Okay. So now, is this related to, I read this, this was years ago. It was around discipline, and it was like, everyone has a certain amount of discipline. It's not like some people have more, you know, and they were saying that you can develop discipline by creating, like, making the decision early, what you're going to do, and then creating it as habit. So then, to your point, it's not discipline that makes you drink a gallon of water. It's a habit now. So is that kind of related?
Yeah, very much so. Like, again, if you're saying if you say, I am a person that doesn't eat French fries, example, right? And
yep.
you allow yourself to understand the why behind French fries, and it's not because you're depriving, it's because of this reason, whatever. You start connecting and say, okay, I went one day without French fries, 2 days. Eventually, when it comes down to, you're at a restaurant and say, hey, would you like fries with that? You can say, you know, no, that's, I'm good. And it's not even a moral decision. There's no even thinking behind it because it's so reflex.
Yeah. I think that's really important. Developing the habit until it's a reflex. I think that's really, I think that's key.
Well, Well, I think so too. And when it becomes reflex, Bobby, what it actually does is creates more capacity for more discipline for something else.
That's right.
Because it's all about, like, I can only handle so much structure. Mm-hmm. So if I really structure around these four things and then one of them becomes a habit, well, now I've only had three things that I need to have structure around. So I can add a fourth because I have more capacity.
Yeah, that's good. That's a really good thing to keep in mind. Nice. It makes me think about, you know, because I do a lot of facilitation, and years ago, we decided to kind of, you know, stop eating as many carbs as what we used to, you know, for a number of reasons. And, you know, because I was having horrible back pain and all that kind of stuff. And it got to a point where it's like, okay, so like you show up at these workshops, right? And there's always like, you're at hotels, or whatever. There's always like bread and rolls and pastries and cookies. And it got to the point where it's like, I don't eat those. And it's not even a decision. It's just a statement.
Yeah. Someone asked me, like, I'll teach a full day workshop and say, you know, and we'll cater lunch or whatever it is and say, are you gonna eat lunch? Nope. I never eat lunch when I'm training. Cause I don't want to mess with it, but that's the thing is, like, it's just a habit for me. Like I just don't.
Yeah.
But I think initially it took a couple times where I'm like, man, that lunch looked really good and I'm hungry. So, but I think what it comes down to, Bobby, is you start understanding what your goals are. This goes back to the clarity. What is your goal here, right? I want to be the best performer on the stage teaching this class. And I want to be top notch and not dragging, because the class is going to drag, you know, that 2:30 time in class is like, oh, I don't want to do that. I want to be known as someone that's going to have the energy that's going to carry through. And then I can go after, like, for, you know, for going after with hang out with the team. I know that if that's my goal, then there are things that I have to avoid or do or not do that are going to prevent me or help me with that.
Yep. God, that it's so spot on. I love that. One other thing I wanted to ask you about, when we spoke before and I asked you, how do you choose your projects? Do you remember your answer?
I think I choose the projects based on where I'm going to grow.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. So when I was a consultant and just did that full time, I had opportunities to do some leadership training where for example, one of the projects was, we want you to come and do some leadership training on strategic thinking. And so this was one of those just say yes kind of projects. So yep. I said yes, and had an opportunity to work with another faculty member with another company. And it was like, wow, what a great learning. This guy had been in the leadership training space for 30 years. And that there was the first module, and it was a little rough because we had completely different teaching styles. And I had an opportunity to do another module with him in Brazil. And first it was Brazil. So I was like, yes, absolutely. I'm going to Brazil.
Yeah. No cold weather.
Yeah, no worry at all, right? The second was, this guy's name was William Strobe. And I said, I get an opportunity to work with William again. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I was able to watch him teach and connect with a very emotive style of leadership and a very spiritual centered type of leadership teaching and ability that I have never witnessed ever before. And so that was the yes for that was, I'm going to grow, not because of my content that I'm teaching is anything good, or that the team that I'm teaching is going to get, I mean, they got stuff out of it. Don't get me wrong. I did a good job, whatever, but it was more for me. And like, I want to sit at the lap of this guy and just soak up his style of teaching.
Yeah. That must have been amazing.
It was fun. I mean, there's times, don't get me wrong, if you're a consultant, the phrase my buddy said, it's toady, you know, think of the invoice, just do it because you're going to get paid. There's times like that, but often the most rewarding times on projects and things or speaking engagements are the times when you're like, I know I'm going to learn from this just as much as like the content or the material might be just kind of rote for me or very pretty basic, but I'm going to learn of how to speak in front of a bigger group or how to run this workshop or how to do this particular type of project just because I said yes and I'd love to learn.
Yeah. What I find interesting there too, Brett, is it sounds like if it's just the routine, you know, it's okay. It almost sounds like when you're pushing yourself or pushing your comfort zone, that maybe that goes hand in hand with learning though, right?
It does, right? You know, there are times of situations where you're teaching the same, and sure, we teach similar content, right, in sales, and like, I've taught OCS a million times.
Yep.
Right, a million.
You know how to do it.
You know how to do it, right? I can do this. I can show up. I know the way the workshops go. And so I look at the situations and say, I'm going to teach this next OCS as a new company. I don't know anything about the company. I don't know what they do. I don't know how they make their sausage. I don't know what they do at all. So I'm like, okay, how do I turn this into a growth opportunity for me? Right. And so when you're looking at those kind of projects, you're looking at situations and say, maybe that's part of the gratitude piece. Like, I'm grateful that I have an opportunity to learn something new today. And you start that maybe as a mantra or an affirmation in the morning on those type of situations where you do things that are a little repetitive or rote or in the grind, if you will, and say, I'm grateful for today and I'm looking for opportunities to learn. What happens with that? The other psychology of your brain is called the RAS, your reticular activating system. I love this piece of it. It's part of your brain that helps you focus on the things that are most important. And so if you set intentions for that day, it's a little NLP, that's another subject for another day, but the idea of you set your intentions and you set your filter and say, I'm grateful for the today, the opportunity to learn, and I'm going to look for something to learn today or look for something to be more curious about. Your brain is now cued into the nuance. Looking for something.
That's really helpful. I love that.
Thanks. I love it. I think as people are looking to get unstuck or to grow or to get out of their own way, or they're finding like I'm stagnant, ask yourself, okay, reframe, what kind of filters are you putting on yourself?
Yeah, that's really powerful. I'm kind of bummed that it came up so late, because we could spend an hour talking about that.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, because I think you're right. You know, you do kind of hit those grooves, and I think a groove is very dangerous to becoming a rut, you know, unless we find a way to stay fresh. And that's kind of what it sounds like to me is, how do we stay fresh? How do we keep ourselves from falling into a rut?
That's right. That's right. And if you find yourself in a position where you have tendencies to fall in a rut, or you can see it, that's the structure, right? It's the clarity. Let's go back to my clarity of my goals. What am I here? How do I define work? What's my why? Go back to that and say, oh yeah. That's what I'm doing here. And then going back and saying, okay, what are the routines that you either have developed consciously or unconsciously that are serving me towards my goal or not, and recalibrate.
Yeah. That's really good. I love that. Maybe we might have to have you back again so we can go into some more of this. Tell me this, or tell us this, if you wouldn't mind. What are you up to now, and where can people learn more about you?
So I think the best way of anyone finding anyone these days is on LinkedIn. So I'm a very active user on LinkedIn. And so I work full-time for IHS Market as a director of sales excellence and enablement. And I get an opportunity to work with one of our biggest business lines and doing these same kind of things, helping people with clarity, helping with their structure, and help them have a better growth mindset. And connect with people all over the world, love collaborating with people. So I think the best way, you can find me on my website or follow me on Instagram, all the socials, if you will, but LinkedIn's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Perfect. That's great. And now, so any part, this has just been fabulous, Brett. Any parting words of wisdom?
Parting words. I put people on the spot. You're not supposed to put me on the spot.
Sorry.
No, I think if anything I would say is looking at the situation is, it's always about the opportunity and the possibility. Like, the world is what you make of it, and everything is a possibility. And if you figure out this way and you do your homework and research and work hard, things will work out for you.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much again. This has been a wealth of information.
Well, I thank you for the time, and I appreciate the invitation. So look forward to hearing the other guests that come on. And I know you interviewed one of my friends, and I can't wait to hear the podcast.
Well, thank you. I really hope that you enjoyed Brett's passion and his enthusiasm for the topic, because I know I did. Here are my key takeaways. Number one, say yes to those opportunities that give you energy, even if it's a stretch, because it will cause us to learn and grow. I absolutely love that this is how Brett chooses his projects. Number two, really seek to cultivate a mindset which helps us to believe that we can learn our way through it, versus the fixed mindset which tells us that if it's not perfect the first time, then we'll never be good at it. That is a flawed way of seeing it. Number three, sustained, duplicated efforts will get you to your goal and give you a sense of momentum, which will then heighten your intrinsic motivation. Number four, If you find yourself in the throes of emotional hijacking, you can try two things to get out of it. Option number one, breathe. Take a deep breath. And here's the thing. Science tells us that our brains need oxygen. And when we are stressed or emotional, taking that moment or two to really breathe deeply will allow us to restore some of the equilibrium. Option number two, actively go to a place of gratitude in your mind. If you want to know more about the power of gratitude, there are a ton of resources. One of my favorite is Barbara Fredrickson, as she has done a lifetime of research on the power of positive emotions and how they contribute to resilience, well-being, and health. And her work is absolutely amazing. Number five, it is easy to lose hope when you are caught up in the grind. A key to getting out of that is to recognize that you're caught up in it and to take a step back and to give yourself a little bit of grace. It's okay. Number six, he talked about his framework that he teaches leaders and others. The first component is clarity. I love that he spoke of this as a direction versus a blueprint. Sometimes we don't have the blueprint, but we know the general direction of where we want to go. Then we can fill in the details as they emerge. The second component is structure. Our brains like to create structure out of chaos. Brett also said that it is important to create structure around our critical routines. Now, to me, this is what allows us to develop the habit until it becomes reflex and we no longer have to think about it. This does two important things. Number one, it allows for the capacity for other disciplines and habits. And number two, it connects to something I read years ago about discipline. And it's this, that everyone has like a set point of discipline. So the trick is to create routines and habits that replace the need for discipline. By doing that, you can reserve your discipline for when you really, really need it. So a super simple example that I remember is that if you're trying to eat healthier, decide every single morning what you'll have for lunch and what you'll have for dinner. That way, the decision has already been made and you won't need discipline later in the day to make a good, healthy choice. And because we're making the decision earlier in the day, it's easier because our discipline hasn't been worn down by the day yet, right? And this is why we don't want to shop at 6 o'clock at night when we're exhausted, when we're tired, when we've worked a full day and we're starving. Our discipline is not going to be at the highest then. The third component to Brett's framework is growth. He said, wire yourself for growth by one, choosing opportunities that will not just allow you to grow, but maybe force you to grow. And two, cultivating the right mindset, the growth mindset. We've referenced this on other episodes, but if you want to learn more about the growth mindset, why it's important and how to cultivate it, check out Carol Dweck and her research. It is mind-blowing. Again, these were just some of my takeaways. My hope is that an episode like this one will give you tangible ideas that you can try out for yourself. If you found this podcast helpful, please consider subscribing as well as leaving us a 5-star review below. It's one of the key ways that we can get the message out there. Also, if you know someone who could benefit from the podcast and the message that we're spreading, please tell them about it. This has been the Unyielded Podcast, and I believe that thriving isn't a destination. It is a process, an evolution where we are continuing to expand who we are. It is how we flourish and how we can direct our energy into a place of positive influence. My life's work is to change the world for the better, one life at a time. I hope that you'll help me do that by sharing the word.